Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and checking in the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alveda, but he's traveling this week. You know, he says he's working, sacrificing, but he's in a place there that he posted some photos in Facebook, and I say you shouldn't do that, you know. So I have the best filling in, our good friend and colleague from eDraft, the European guru, Kieran Clark, one of your favorites with us. How are you, Kieran? How are you?
Thank you, Carlos. I'm feeling very well. And we must quickly apologize to everyone who may have tuned in this evening, hoping to hear and get their weekly dosage of Fred Altvater. I know he has many fans, particularly female fans, but also some guys as well like Fred. So we apologize to them. But yes, I'm stepping in tonight, and I'm happy to do so. A lot to talk about, obviously, with the Solheim Cup, the controversy around that, and the great comeback from the Americans, and obviously Jason Day becoming world number one and winning again at the BMW Championship and putting himself in pole position now to win the Tour Championship and potentially claim that $10 million prize fund for the FedEx Cup. So there's a lot to discuss, Carlos, and I'm looking forward to it.
A lot of news, a lot of exciting news. So we're going to start right away, like always, our weekend backswing where we recap the weekend action. And the Champions Tour, the European Senior and Challenge Tours had the week off. So we have to start with the main event this past week, and that was the event of the week. I mean, the Solheim Cup that was celebrated there at the St. Leon and Roth Golf Club in southwest Germany. And like Kieran mentioned, what a comeback story, comeback by Team USA. And I'm going to start off because, as you know, Kieran, Fred could not stay away. So he had to leave an audio, you know, he has to. So he has something to say about the Solheim Cup. So we're going to go first to his audio that he left us, and then we go to you, Kieran. So let's hear Fred here.
Hi, guys. Hey, I want to thank Kieran for coming on doing the show, filling in for me this week while I'm out here traveling around and checking out some new places to get people on the show. So, hey, you know, I couldn't be quiet. I just had to talk about the Solheim Cup win last weekend by the U.S. team. That great 8.5 to 3.5 Sunday singles run by the Americans in the 2015 Solheim Cup matches at St. Leon Roth in Germany has only one equal, and that was in 1999. With the U.S. Ryder Cup team when Ben Crenshaw had that feeling. Julie Enster's 2015 team was down 10-6 after the team events, and the Europeans only needed 4 points to retain possession of the Solheim Cup. Playing on home soil, Europe had been in control of the matches, and it seemed a cinch that they would clinch the needed points to singles to hoist the cup for the third consecutive time. Something happened on the way to the trophy presentation that completely changed the complexion of the competition, though. Ryder Cup, Presidents, Walker, and Solheim Cups are meant to be friendly affairs. They are exhibitions of competing cultures for ladies and gentlemen. The women of the American Solheim Cup team felt Suzanne Pedersen violated that cardinal rule and woefully wronged them when she refused a concession to the only rookie in the competition, Allison Lee, when she inadvertently picked up her ball during a four-ball match. Finishing up a Saturday match that had to be completed early Sunday morning, Pedersen and her partner Charlie Hall found themselves one down to the American team of Allison Lee and Brittany Linscombe as they stood on the 17th green. Lee had a 1.5-foot putt to have the hole and maintain their one-hole advantage heading to the 18th green. Lee later said she heard someone tell her to pick it up as she watched her opponents, Pedersen and Hall, turn and walk away from the green. Thinking the Europeans had conceded the hole, she picked up her ball. Pedersen and Hall immediately turned around and denied giving the putt, forcing a loss of hole, which resulted in the match being tied with just one hole left to play. Lee and Linscombe were clearly rattled by this turn of events. The Europeans went on to birdie the last and claim the full point for Captain Kieran Koch's team. Hall of Fame member Laura Davies, who was broadcasting the match for Sky Sports, was clearly bothered by Pedersen's breach of ladylike etiquette. She said on air, "How Suzanne can justify that, I will never, ever know. We are all fierce competitors, but ultimately it's unfair. We have to play week in, week out together, and you do not do something like that to a fellow pro. I am disgusted. I know she is angry and justifying everything, but she has let herself down, and she has certainly let her team down. I am so glad I am not on that team this time." U.S. Captain Julie Engster was clearly upset by the ruling, but consoled the young American. Engster had said at the outset the excessive cheerleading by team members would not be needed, but evidently a 10-6 deficit warranted a rethink of that decision. The American team used Pedersen's slight of Lee as motivation and channeled that fire to outperform the European team in singles. Every member of Team USA seemed to take it as a personal slap in the face and came out with a vengeance on Sunday. Lexi Thompson and Carlota Segonda both made three birdies during their match and had the first match out. You know, they both played so well, they could have been MVP of their respective teams for the week. Wins by Morgan Pressel, Allison Lee, and Jarena Pillar in three of the next five matches gave the U.S. a chance. Pillar made a clutch putt on the 18th to secure a full point that was especially big and signaled the beginning of the end for the Europeans. Wins at the bottom of the field by Lizette Salas, Angela Stafford versus Pedersen, by the way, and Christy Kerr, as well as a blowout win of Caroline Headwell by Michelle Wee, sparked the team. In the anchor match, captain's pick Paula Kramer secured the win with a 4-3 win over German native Sandra Gau. For the Europeans, Charlie Hall was especially spectacular in the team matches. Hall finished with a 4-1-0 record, with her only loss coming in that singles match after she was so devastated by the concession problem. She was devastated by the events surrounding the Allison Lee issue, and it really affected her play. It was a very good week in Germany for the Solheim Cup, guys, which continues to grow in stature as a world-class event. Controversy, drama, and great golf shots make for an exciting competition. We just have to wait two more years until the Solheim Cup returns to Des Moines.
Yeah, but it's just two more years, so that's just around the corner here. And so,
it will fly by.
Yeah, it will go fly. So what's your take on this, on the Solheim Cup, the win by the U.S., the controversy? How about it?
Yeah, you know, it was quite very unfortunate in a number of ways. But I think the quality of the golf that was exceptional throughout, and the comeback to the Americans in the final day in singles was astonishing, and they deserve so much credit for how well they played in that session. And the Europeans played magnificently in the team sessions in the first couple of days as well. So the golf was a very high standard, but there were a number of incidents that certainly detracted from that. One was actually the pace of play from the players was astonishingly slow, almost unbearably slow at times. There was one match on Saturday that literally they played 11 holes, and it took them over 3 hours to do so. And that is unacceptable, particularly in match play, where it's bad enough in stroke play, but in match play, the game should be a lot quicker than that. And the amount of time that it takes to, a lot of these female players are lined up by their caddies, which is something that should be outlawed immediately. And that makes it difficult to watch at times. It's a shame because it does detract from the quality of the play, which was outstanding. And then there's another incident as well with Annika Sørenstam, the European vice-captain, who was accused, people forget this now after the concession controversy, but she was accused of coaching the players, giving them advice on the course, which a vice-captain is not entitled to do so under the rules. And actually the same thing was happened 2 years ago in Colorado. Sørenstam was also accused on that occasion of doing the exact same thing. She's denied the allegations and I apologise for any issues with that. But on the main concession, obviously, was the talking point of the week, and it was an unfortunate incident in so many ways. We have to look at it for one thing. Initially, Allison Lee, ultimately a player has to be absolutely certain that a hole has been conceded. And let's be honest here, given how short the putt was she had left, and given the manner of the crowd were walking away, that Charlie Hull walked away off the green, there was the atmosphere, they would suggest that the hole had already been given up, and that was fine. But she should have waited for absolute confirmation, and perhaps that was a sign of her inexperience, obviously, being a debutant player. And she spoke about it the entire week about being very nervous and being somewhat overawed by the occasion. and perhaps that little lapse in concentration right there. However, the problem here is, of course, Suzanne Pedersen being the senior member of the European Partnership and a two-time major champion, obviously a tremendous competitor, but you know, common sense really should have prevailed here. You know, it would have it did no one any good at all, Americans or Europeans, in fact, their reputation. Imagine if Europe had actually won the Solheim Cup by 1 point, it turned out to be that point. It would have been a tarnished victory. Because golf is an unusual game in the respect that there is a clear set of rules. And by the set of rules, by the letter of the law, if you like, then the Europeans perhaps were correct in what they did. But golf has this almost separate set of rules, which is the etiquette and the sportsmanship and the gentlemanly nature of the game. We saw it obviously back in 69 at the Ryder Cup when Jack Nicklaus conceded Tony Jacklin's putt, of course, which halved the overall match. And we've seen incidents throughout most other sports, of course, players and teams take advantage of the rules for their own benefit. And that is frowned upon in golf, and that is what Suzanne Pedersen and Charlie Hull did on this occasion by clearing the victory on that hole and going one up with one hole to play and ultimately winning the match two up in the end by winning the last hole as well. I think common sense should have prevailed, and Karen Cook, the European captain, she was actually on the scene at the time. She should have stepped in there and just said, right, let's just concede the hole, have the hole here, and go to the last tee, you know, level, and the best team will win. That would have diffused the entire situation and would have done the reputation of the game, the women's game, so much better, because it was a really unfortunate incident in that respect. And certainly, it stirred on the Americans. And that was if they needed any more motivation to get back into it, that was it. That was the instigator. And Angela Stanford, of course, who hadn't won a Solheim Cup match for years, went out and beat Suzanne Pedersen in the singles, and that was a real fired victory, and that certainly pushed them on to getting what was a fantastic victory. Fred referenced the comeback at Brookline in the Ryder Cup in 1999, but you can also draw parallels, of course, with the comeback at Medina from Europe in 2012 in the Ryder Cup. So it was a stunning comeback, and a lot of players who had question marks certainly performed on that final day. You know, Michelle Wee had a lot of injury problems recently. She was magnificent in crushing Caroline Hedvall, who was really poor throughout the week and was probably quite a poor pick from Karen Koch. And Paula Creamer, of course, was the captain's pick for a terrible season, struggled for form, struggled for confidence, and she won that final match, secured that crucial final point to win the Cup for America. So, fantastic for her. But yeah, the whole situation was unfortunate. Suzanne Pedersen, oddly enough, after the event in the press conference, wasn't remorseful at all about what happened. She said she'd do the exact same thing again. Then, of course, yesterday, she released a lengthy statement on Instagram, an apology, a heartfelt apology. She completely changed her tune overnight. I think perhaps the simple reason that Suzanne plays predominantly in America, and how would the American players and the American fans react to her if they thought that she wasn't a cheat. She wasn't cheating, but she wasn't very sportsmanlike. And the game of golf values those ethics more than any other sport, I would say. And certainly she let herself down in that respect. And Laura Davies, who is obviously one of the most respected players in the women's game, particularly on the European side, and she was absolutely correct in her criticism of Suzanne Pedersen and what the Europeans did that day. And dare I say, it almost felt like justice was done when the Americans won the Solheim Cup, which is unfortunate because it should be a showcase of great golf, and it was, but this incident and many others did certainly mar what was overall a fantastic event.
I have to agree with you, but the thing is, it's unfortunate that we have to be talking about this incident instead of mm-hmm. a great play, you know, that took place all weekend. I mean, we saw like how Paula Creamer, she justified being that captain's pick. Christy Kerr-Levetton, 3-0-1. You saw also Jarena Pillar from the Americans, 3-0-1. Wow, what a surprise to me. I didn't expect that. Michelle Wee getting that huge win. Of course, we saw that come out again from Charlie Hull. Like Fred mentioned, 4-1-0, and unfortunately, the last match was the one she missed, and obviously she was rattled by what happened. As you would see the expressions from Allison Lee, she was, you know, crying and all that after the match ended. Charlie Hull said also, she was also crying. And like you mentioned very well, I think that Karen Koch, you know, she could have intervened there in the conceded putt controversy. She will forever be second-guessed for not front-loading that singles lineup, of course, as well. And by now, everyone has either seen, heard, or read about the Pedersen-Allison Lee incident. I am sure most have formed their opinions over what took place there. I just want to say that I am overjoyed that this incident did not have any effect on the final outcome. As an American, of course, I was rooting for my team to pull out the victory, but it wasn't. But if it wasn't meant to be, you know, I was just hoping that Team Europe would win by a margin bigger than 1 point.
Mm.
And like you mentioned, Suzanne, she did apologize yesterday in a written statement. Hopefully, the above statement was heartfelt and was not posted because of pressure and her by her sponsors, Nike for one. We're never too old to learn from our mistakes, and hopefully Suzanne will learn from hers. Time will tell. Summing up, I would like to say that the Solheim Cup of this year was a huge success to me for women's golf. We all got to see some incredible golf. It was very exciting for TV. We were on the edge of our seats right to the very end. Julie Engster should be very proud of what her team accomplished. It will be remembered for a long, long time, and I will remember for a long, long time how players such as Sandra Gall, Melissa Reed, and Carolyn Mazzone lost with class and dignity, and it was a great, great event. Like Fred mentioned, can't wait for these 2 years to happen to see the next one. So any final words before we move on to the PGA Tour?
Yeah, just to quickly say that you mentioned Charlie Hull and Melissa Reed there, and for me they were the two standout players for Europe, the two young English women. Obviously Charlie was a tremendous player in 2013 in Colorado when she was just 17 as a rookie. She's carried on to this year. I think she's a player who she's very aggressive in her approach, both mentally and technically, and I think that really suits her in match play. Perhaps the stroke play affects her consistency at times and getting four rounds put together, which is so aggressive, but in match play, when birdies and you're allowed to be, there's a more creative freedom in match play, and that certainly suits her. And Melissa Reed made a comeback to the team after missing out last time. A lot's happened in the intervening period, of course. Her mother was tragically killed in a car crash, and she came back from that really well, and it was fantastic to see her back in the Solheim Cup team and performing so well. So there were some fantastic individual performances on both sides. I do agree with you, Carlos, that perhaps the controversy about the Suzanne Pettersen incident, that has detracted from that, but I think overall we need to remember how great the play was overall, and certainly from the Americans and singles, which were a fantastic comeback, and it was certainly a great theatre to watch.
Definitely. And moving on now to the PGA Tour, the BMW Championship, that was played at the Conway Farms Club just outside of Chicago in Lake Forest, Illinois. Jason Day, the FedEx Cup points leader, he went wire to wire to win for the seventh time in 170 PGA Tour starts, in addition to an unconscious third victory in his last four events, converting 54-hole leads at each. They became just the fourth player in tour history to win four times over a six-tournament stretch. He's just 27 years old. He circled just three birdies in that finale against one bogey, but he carried a six-shot advantage, largest 54-hole lead on tour this season, into the finale after having set up his run at the Silverware with scores of 61, 63, and 69, including he was flirting with a 59 on that first run. On those opening 3 days, he finished in 22 under par to claim an emphatic six-shot victory. American Daniel Berger also closed with a 2-under to reach 16-under for the week, earning outright second place. Scott Piercy making birdie at the last to clinch third. And J.B. Holmes, Ricky Fowler, and Wermack over time for fourth. One further shot adrift. Jordan Spieth finished at 11-under and a tie for 13. Four in, four out for the FedEx Cup Finals. Harris English, he backpedaled there to a 1-over par in that final round, but concluded a 10-under, good enough for a four-way tie for 19th place and move him from 32nd on the FedEx Cup standings to 30th. In the end, it was Kevin Na's par putt at the last who bumped PGA Tour rookie Justin Thomas. Well, from what it was a projected 30th to a 32nd, and English moving to that final spot heading to Eastlake. He's joined there by Daniel Berger, who's also a rookie. He moved from 46 to 9. Scott Piercy moved from 44 to 20. And Kevin Na from 34 to 27 as the only four players who enter the week on the outside looking in to crack the top 30. The top four that were ousted were Daniel Summerhays, Russell Knox, Jason Bond, and Ben Martin. You know, with this win, they become the second wire-to-wire winner this season and is the fifth golfer since 2003 to win five or more times in a season, the third player to win two of the first three playoff events since they started in 2007. Oh, and in addition to claiming the hardware, he ascended to number one in the official World Golf rankings for the first time in his career. Kieran will be talking more in the practice range about a battle for number one, but Danny Lee said in an interview, whatever Jason Day is doing, or which course he's playing, is ridiculous. And I say that was hardly an exaggeration here.
No, certainly not. And it was ridiculous. The first 2 days, he was a man possessed, really. He was 61, 63, could have been the 59, of course, in that first day. Well, it carried over to the second day, of course, with the weather delay that they had. And it's amazing. Since the Open Championship, when he left that putt short in the last hole to get into the playoff, that Johnson ultimately won, Jason's been just, the form he's shown has been incredible. You know, he's won the Canadian Open the week after that, and he's carried on to the remainder of the season, of course, winning the PGA Championship and that tremendous battle with Jordan Spieth. And I think there's a real, he's putting so much better, but I think there's a real confidence, and I think it's a mental change more than anything else. You know, technically he was always supremely good. We've seen that for the last 5 years. He's contended in so many majors, and but he hasn't quite, to this point, of course, before now, he hadn't won enough events, really, with his talent. And when he won that Canadian Open, the floodgates opened, and the confidence he gained from that, and the attitude shown, he's a completely different player, and he looks at someone who could become someone who could dominate the game along with the other top players for a number of years to come. You know, he has all the tools of a modern tour professional now. He's long off the tee, hits it fairly to the straight. He's a good solid iron player. He's got a solid short game, and he putts brilliantly. You know, he's got all the attributes that are needed now to be a successful player at the top level of the game. And after those 2 rounds, of course, led by a mile, and that's not the easiest thing at times. A lot of players are strategy-wise not sure whether they'd be a bit more defensive or be aggressive, and how they're going to bridge that in the final 2 rounds to get the win. But he showed a real sense of calmness and obviously confidence in going out there, and he didn't really get out of second gear, and he shot 269s to win the tournament, really comfortably in by 6 shots, and that's someone who, it's in a way, it's his own way Tiger-esque, and of course he's achieve something that Tiger achieved by winning 5 times in a season. That's a very rare feat and a fantastic achievement. I know Jordan Spieth won 2 majors this year and deserves all the plaudits for that. But Jason Day, to win that many times, is quite something. Obviously only Tiger. And Vijay Singh, people forget that. Vijay in 2004 won 9 times, which was incredible, including the PGA Championship that year. So it's a rare feat, and this year's been kind of bookended by the former Jordan Spieth and now Jason Day, and it's certainly fantastic to watch. But away from Jason, of course, Daniel Berger, who lost the playoff, if you remember, to Parry Harrington at the Honda Classic back in March, only 22 years old, and this is a big week for him. Had 2 great opening rounds, of course, and was 65-64. And then he's got himself now into the Tour Championship, get top 30 of the FedEx Cup, which means he now gets an automatic invitation to next year's Masters Tournament. So it's a real boost for him. And certainly opens up many doors for a player who's got a lot of ability, that's for sure, and a really exciting prospect for American golf. Same with Scott Pearson getting into the Tour Championship as well. And Rory McIlroy, he lamented his putting all week. It didn't seem to hold anything, but yet he was still in the top 5, at 14 under par. That's just how well he played from tee to green. And Rory is, we'll talk about this later on in the practice, but for me, he's by a mile still the best player from tee to green. When he putts well, he will win every week. And, he's still there. And I know he didn't putt well enough to quite challenge Jason Day, but, Rory's still playing some good stuff. And look for him to perhaps have a good week at East Lake coming up. But Jason Day is obviously, it's been tremendous to watch the past couple of months with him. And I look forward to seeing what he can do next week at the Tour Championship.
And we'll be talking about that on the practice training show. Everybody be aware of that. Hey, there were 2 more tournaments. I have to start with the European Tour, the 72nd Degree Open Italia, presented by Damiani. It was played at the Golf Club Milano in Parco Reale di Monza in Italy, where Richard Thalberg of Sweden, he beat Martin Kaymer in a playoff to win it for his first European Tour victory. It was on the second playoff hole at the par 4 18th, where Thalberg sunk a birdie putt following an impressive second shot out of the rough. That came just after Kaymer missed his slightly longer putt. Kaymer had entered the final round with a share of the lead and also missed long birdie putts on the 17th and 18th holes in regulation after having wasted a 3-stroke lead. He made 3 bogeys in 5 holes on the back nine and required a birdie on the 16th to get alongside Thalberg, who crept up through the field and had 3 birdies on the final 5 holes. 7 golfers finished 1 stroke back in the tie for third. Kieran, how about this win by the 247th ranked Thalberg? Gutsy or lucky?
Well, we'll give him credit for hanging in there, having a good finish and getting into the playoff. But certainly Martin Kaymer, it's one that he should have won. He let that get away with those mistakes he made in the first half of the back nine, dropping those 3 shots, and that was a massive blow. He didn't quite recover from that. A player of his experience and success and and caliber, you'd expect him to go and win that tournament quite comfortably, having got into that position. And, of course, Kaymer had this disappointment, of course, of missing out on the FedEx Cup playoffs and subsequently, somewhat bizarrely, missing out on his PGA Tour membership. He didn't play enough events, which is quite incredible for a player who obviously won the Players' Championship and the US Open last year. Seems a bit odd in the PGA Tour's regulations that's the case. However, he didn't do enough, so he's back in Europe. I didn't quite get the win here, but Carl Berg, his first win on the European Tour, is obviously a fantastic thing for him. 2-year exemption now. He's now going to be in the final series coming up, and again, it opens up many doors. Winning is a massive thing for these guys, particularly the lower-ranked guys. It elevates them to our level in the Tour. They get better tee times, they get everything. They're in better groups. It's just it's a real life changer in so many ways for these guys. And for Martin Kaymer, of course, I would say, someone of that ability and that experience, you'd expect him to actually go to win the event. But disappointment for him, but he will certainly move on. He's had some tough times in the past, but he's shown some good form in Italy overall. And last thing I saw from the Italian Open was the final event on the European Tour for a hero of Italy from the years gone by, Constantino Rocca, who for many years was really the only great Italian golfer there was. Obviously now have the Molinaris and Matteo Manassero, but for a long time it was just Constantino Rocca, who's now 58 years old. He played in the Italian Open on an invitation for the last time and played his last event on the European Tour. A guy who's played in two Ryder Cups back in the 1990s and, of course, was part of two significant major championships in the 1990s. We all remember the holding the shot on the smoke and burn into on the 72nd hole of the Open Championship St Andrews in 1995 after duffing his first shot, and the amazing reaction where he slammed the ground in joy, almost tears of joy, and then he got into the playoff with John Daly and subsequently lost. And another great trivia question that Rocca is the answer of is, who did Tiger Woods play with in the final round of the 1997 Masters when he won by 12 shots? You know, everyone remembers that Masters, remember Tiger winning by such a dominant margin and really changing the game and causing a massive, you know, change, real incredible result for Tiger. But who did he play with that final day? Constantino Rocca. So he played his last event on the European Tour. He shot 72 in the last day and was very emotional, tears in his eyes, a very emotive character. But he got a huge uproarious reception from the fans there, and well deserved for a fantastic career for Rocca. And you know, Carl Berg will hope to achieve some of the great things that Rocca did in his career in the coming years. But a great one for Carl Berg, but disappointment certainly for Martin Kaymer.
Definitely, and hopefully from there he will learn. But like you mentioned, a veteran like him of such success should have closed that deal. Finally, in the Web.com Tour, the Small Business Connection Championship played at the River Run Country Club in Davidson, North Carolina. Chez Revich, he crafted a 6-under par in the final round to steal a win at 15-under. He circled 7 birdies to just 1 bogey in his lap around the River Run Country Club in the second of 4 legs of the Web.com Tour Finals. That was good enough for him to tie with Roberto Castro for the low round of the day. He got it done thanks to solid ball striking, ranking inside the top 3 in both driving accuracy and greens regulation. He'll definitely start the next season on the PGA Tour with 5 starts remaining on his major medical extension to collect $365,955 or 152.667 FedEx Cup points and retain status, but today's victory, he's assured of having no worse than fully exempt status in the reshuffle. So how about it, Ken?
Yeah, fantastic for Chez Revich, who, of course, won the Canadian Open a number of years ago when he was just a young guy. And he's still only 33 years old, we have to remember. He turns 34 later this year, so he has a lot of time ahead of him. But, of course, his progress in his career was really stalled by that wrist injury he had a couple of years ago. He missed the entire 2013-2014 season. And that was a massive blow, and obviously why he has the medical exemption. So to get this win here now, gets him back on the tour, gets him on full-time status next year, that's a massive thing for him now. He can start planning his schedule now with the knowledge that he's going to have a full schedule, and that's a huge boost for him. And also I noticed Jamie Lovemark finished second. He's someone who, of course, a number of years ago was really touted as being one of the next big things, a player who would be perhaps like a Jordan Spieth or a Ricky Fowler, you know, a guy that can come on the main tour and really dominate and play well and win many events. But it has never really quite happened for Lovemark, but now he's going to get back on the PGA Tour this coming season, so maybe it's now finally the time for him to actually rise up and show that early potential. But for Chez Revich, obviously a fantastic win for him, and to get him back on the tour, you know, overcomes those injury problems that he had. Hopefully now he can look forward to a decent chapter in his career.
That wraps up our weekend back thing. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
Back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, sponsored by United Golf Network, and we're going to start the tee off. It's going to be by Kieran. Of course, he has a longer range than me, so he's going to take the Tiger Woods, apparently another surgery, another shell for the year, to Kieran.
I know, it's somewhat hard to believe. It's a recurring tale for Tiger, of course, and when Jason Day and Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy are making headlines, we almost forget that Tiger is still there. I know he's one of the greatest players of all time, arguably the greatest, and but he's somewhat fallen out of the headlines. Unfortunately, when he does make the headlines now, it's almost negative. And another chapter in the tragic tale that has been Tiger's later career, really since 2008. And it was confirmed on Friday that the 14-time major champion had undergone successful microdiscectomy surgery on his back. As many of you will remember, he first received that procedure back in March of last year. But this really come as a major surprise to us all, considering he had not long confirmed his participation in next month's Fries.com Open and, of course, the Hero World Challenges event he hosts. So he confirmed his place in those events, and he had this surgery out of nowhere. So it came as a shock to everyone. And Tiger, of course, remember back to his last performance at the Wyndham Championship where he had a top 10. It was a relatively encouraging week. And remember that he had some visible discomfort in his back during that final round. He was holding his back and he was limping a little bit, struggling with that. And apparently he had some kind of discomfort and in the hip and back area during the last several weeks, and including at the Wyndham Championship, of course. And an examination clearly showed that random discomfort was actually coming from his back, and was elected to have surgery quickly in order to ensure his return to the PGA Tour as soon as possible in 2016. And that will be, at the very least, in the early months of next year, from the spring. And we can already start speculating about when we'll see him again, whether it be at the Farmer Insurance Open at Turley Pines, or maybe even the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, where he's had such incredible success. Who knows what's going to happen? And, ultimately, Carlos, with Tiger, and such persistent injury problems, and they've plagued him now for a decade, from his knees to his back, to his ankle, all kinds of things. And they've plagued him, and it will eventually take their toll. You know, no matter how fit and athletic he may be, he's a fantastic athlete, but your body can only take so much, particularly when you're a professional player and you're putting a lot of strain on your body by practicing all the time and all kinds of things, all the demands on your physical self. And of course, you must remember as well that he's not getting any younger either. You know, he's going to turn 40 later this year. And with the dominance of Jason Day and Rory and Jordan Spieth, you know, Tiger is so far behind these guys now. In every sense of the word, it's unreal. He's as far behind these guys as he was ahead of everyone else back in his heyday 15 years ago. And it does now seem, you know, as he enters now the fifth decade of his life, to be increasingly unlikely that Woods will ever become a consistent top player again. And no matter what you may think of him, whether you like him or not, it is certainly sad to see someone who was so good, and I say arguably the greatest player ever, reduced to this shell of his former self.
I couldn't agree more with you. And it's so sad to see such a great player that meant so much to golf starting to go down that way. And it reminds me, of course, this name that I'm going to mention has never had the same success as Tiger. I mean, nobody else has. But, you know, Freddie Couples is somebody that had such a great potential and great play, and he got, you know, his back started giving up on him, and look at what he's been limited by it. So
absolutely,
it might be something like that to Tiger as well.
Absolutely, that's a good comparison. I make another comparison as well, which would be Seve Ballesteros, who had also incredible success when he was a young man in his 20s and his early 30s. But he didn't win a major after 1989 because he had real back trouble throughout the 1990s. He lost his swing, lost his game, struggled persistently with back problems, and that really blighted his career as he went into his 40s, late 30s into his 40s. And that, again, someone who was one of the most talented players and most naturally gifted players to ever play the game, a five-time major champion, a record winner in the European Tour, Ryder Cup hero. After the age of 36, 37, he was a shell of his former self because of injury problems. And in many ways, I think Tiger's perhaps going down that same route, unfortunately.
Right, I think it's unfortunate. Hey, I have some news from Rory McIlroy and DJ Dustin Johnson. Let's start with Rory McIlroy. He will compete in next month's Turkish Airlines Open. It's the first tournament of the European Tour's end-of-season final series competition. 26-year-old Northern Irishman has missed a large chunk of the season after sustaining an ankle injury playing soccer with his friends. McIlroy played in Turkey 3 years ago when the tournament was an exhibition event. He didn't do too well, so he wants to do well this time. Frenchman Victor Dubuzon won the event when it made its debut on the European Tour schedule in 2013. And American Brooks Koepka, he triumphed a year later. The Turkish Open will take place between October 29 and November 1st with 78 players competing for a prize fund of $7 million. Shanghai is hosting the next two final series events, the WGC HSBC Champions and the BMW Masters, before the season ends with the $8 million DP World Tour Championship in Dubai from November 19th to the 22nd. And about Dustin Johnson, you know, DJ, he expanded his legal proceedings this week involving a $3 million loan he made last year to a former financial advisor. Johnson filed a second lawsuit on Wednesday in a U.S. district court in Georgia against Tony Adams and his firm Alliance of Financial Professionals, AFP. In the suit, Johnson claims that Adams, a Georgia-based accountant, and AFP breached their fiduciary duty, committing professional negligence and malpractice. According to the complaint, Adams and AFP advised Johnson to loan Nathan Hardwick and the Morris firm $3 million. Last October, Johnson filed a separate lawsuit against Hardwick and the Morris firm claiming RICO and conspiracy violation. In Wednesday's filing, Johnson claims that in July 2014, Hardwick contacted AFP to assist in the investigation into Morris firm's financial affairs, and that in August 2014, Adams attended a meeting where a $5.9 million shortfall in the Morris firm's escrow accounts was confirmed. Despite that knowledge, Johnson said that Adams advised him to loan Hardwick and the Morris firm $3 million. Kieran Johnson is seeking punitive damages from Adams and AFP, and this is just the latest saga, latest chapter on this saga that I think is going to last for a few years.
Yeah, absolutely, Carlos. And I have some more contentious issues here in my piece here on Peter Dawson, who, after 16 years, will be standing down this week from his position as chief executive of the RNA. This Friday will be his final day in that role. It's been a long and historic tenure for a number of reasons, of course. He broke up the old format of the RNA, created the business side of the RNA from the old golf club, and improved the Open Championship in so many ways, and, of course, the first initiation of female members to the Royal and Ancient Club as well. So a lot's happened for Peter Dawson in his tenure as the chief executive of the club. Having overseen his final Open at St Andrews back in July, he will now be succeeded by Martin Slumbers. However, before departing into the sunset as president of the International Golf Federation, the former engineer did comment on some future events, not least the status of Turnberry on the Open Championship rotation. This has been an issue all throughout the summer. The resort, which last hosted the Open Championship back in 2009, of course, is now under the ownership of Donald Trump, who is causing all sorts of controversies in the United States during his run for the presidential nomination of the Republican Party, with the suggestion being that major championships should not be held at a course belonging to such a divisive figure. And in the summer, Donald Trump caused outrage by suggesting that Mexico was sending sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems, they're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people. Not the wisest comment, to say the least, from a candidate for president. And in recent days, of course, there have been further controversial incidents involving Donald Trump causing offense to Muslims in America after Trump failed to correct a supporter of his who alleged that U.S. President Barack Obama was not an American or indeed a Christian, both things which are obviously false, but Trump failed to correct that. Another suggestion that Trump's ownership may prohibit Turnberry from hosting the Open in the future, Peter Dawson said, and I quote, "To think that we are going to determine where an Open is held because of something somebody said in the political trail in America is absurd. I don't think that's going to happen. We have other priorities, but that's for a future committee to judge. And the Open probably, Carlos, will not be able to be played there until at least 2020, because the Open is expected to return to Royal Port Rush in 2019, rather, and the Open is widely expected to go to St Andrews in 2021, because it will be the 150th anniversary, or sorry, 150th in playing of the championship. So 2020 is the first date likely on the calendar that Turnberry can return to the rotation. And Turnberry is, of course, going under some major changes right now, overseen by Trump and Martin Ebert, who's a RNA course architect, some really impressive looking changes. So we'll see how the course looks like next year. But I certainly think that the resort will return to the Open rotation eventually. But certainly the association that it has with Donald Trump, in some ways, and for some people, is certainly causing tarnishing its reputation a little bit, which is unfortunate, as it is obviously a fantastic golf course and a wonderful place. So wait and see what happens. It's obviously something for Martin Slumbers and his committee to deal with in the future when that issue comes up. But Donald Trump, we talk about him all the time because he's got an amazing ability to get into the headlines, and I suppose that's probably why he's leading in the polls.
It's surprising, but hey, anything can happen. Hey, I have some news.
It's a strange world, Carlos, isn't it? Anything can happen. It's a mad world we live in.
That's right. Hey, Henry Smokler, who's nearly 20 years of high-level legal service, 11 in the golf industry, he's highlighted by guiding some of the game's most groundbreaking broadcast and digital media partnerships, has been named general counsel for the PGA of America. Smokler, who begins service in October 5, will be based in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, and will report to PGA Chief Executive Officer Pete Bebacqua. Smokler will be responsible for all legal affairs for one of the world's largest working sports organizations, including all corporate, strategic, and tactical legal initiatives. From 2004 to his joining the PGA of Staff of America staff, Smokler served in several business and legal roles for the United States Golf Association. Most recently, he served as Managing Director of Broadcast and Digital Media, with responsibility for developing and managing the USGA's relationship with its broadcast and digital media partners, and overseeing the direction of the USGA's digital platforms. His recent duties included overseeing the integration of Fox Sports as the USGA's primary broadcast partner. Prior to that role, he served as the Associate General Counsel of the USGA from 2004 through 2012, with responsibility for corporate governance, tax, and regulatory matters. He began his professional career in 1997 as an associate with Wilkie Farr and Gallagher in New York City. Later, he joined Davis & Gilbert LLP, also of New York, 2000. He's a native of Boulder, Colorado. So Smokler, he earned his Juris Doctor degree from Georgetown University Law Center in Washington, D.C., and received a Bachelor's of Arts degree in government from Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. So he seems like a great experienced guy there for that position. So we want to congratulate him on being named the general counsel for the PGA of America.
Absolutely, Carlos. I must also say that the name Henry Smokler is absolutely fantastic. I think that's one of the best names I've heard for quite a long time. Mr. Smokler, I do love that. And he's a character out of an old Western film, I think. But, so I have a story here on the Olympic Games, which, of course, golf's long-awaited return to the grand showpiece of sport hasn't gone particularly smoothly, it's fair to say, with the progress of the golf course in Rio de Janeiro having been long under scrutiny. And Ty Votaw, who is the vice president of the International Golf Federation, confirmed last week the golf course would finally receive its first playing test this coming March next year, with a one-day exhibition being favoured over a regular 72-hole tournament, which was the initial plan. And the players who will be taking part are yet to be confirmed, but expect to be both male and female golfers from PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour. And it was felt that a one-day event would better suit a golf course that's still maturing. And Votaw explained, quote, "We just want to make sure the golf course can come through the growing season, to make sure that whatever competition is held, it doesn't do anything to set back the overall conditions and growing of the course." And, let's be honest here, considering the Olympic Games are now less than a year away, 10 months away, that does sound somewhat concerning to me. However, Votaw was quick to state that they are encouraged by the golf course, but did confess that the next 6 months are very crucial in its development. And he explains, and I quote, "I walked the golf course 2 weeks ago, all 18 holes, and I was pleased with how it looked. While positive, that's a very small part of the overall maintenance plan and growing and conditioning needs to take place between now and the Games. We want to make sure that the appropriate resources, equipment and manpower are applied to this living, breathing venue. So there's still questions, of course, with the golf course, still questions with the whole format, which is very uninspiring. So Olympic Games, golf returning after 112 years, and there isn't a great deal of anticipation, it's fair to say about it. It seems more of a hindrance than something to be inconvenienced more than anything else. But it will be interesting to see next year, Carlos, how successful golf return to Olympic Games ultimately turns out to be. I have my doubts, and for a number of reasons, but time will tell, and the proof will be in the eating, of course, and next year for the Olympic Games.
Well, certainly, time will tell. We'll see how it goes. Hey,
yes,
my final, the final news piece is about HSBC, who is considering ending its sponsorship of its flagship golf tournament, the WGC HSBC Champions in Shanghai, as the contract expires this year. That's what was a senior official told Associated Press. HSBC Global Head of Sponsorship, Gilles Morgan, said the British bank was currently evaluating its association with the $8.5 million event, one of four World Golf Championships WGCs held worldwide. Morgan added that sponsorship of the HSBC's Women's Champions in Singapore, one of the LPGA tournaments played in Asia, was also under review because this is the last year of their golf portfolio, so they're in discussions with everybody. I mean, that means they are negotiating with everybody. The HSBC Champions has been a highlight of the Asian golfing calendar since it debuted in 2005 before joining the four-stop WGC Championship Series in 2009. The next WGC HSBC Champions in November will be the 10th edition at Shanghai's Cheshun Golf Club, and it has also been held at the Mansion Hills in Guangdong, Southern China. The WGC Championships, the WGCs are among the most prestigious tournaments in the golfing calendar. Winners in China include Phil Mickelson and Bubba Watson. Morgan said that HSBC's sponsorship of the Women's Champions was all part of the same conversation. He did not offer a timetable for any announcements. The bank also sponsors the British Open and the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship. The uncertain picture for golf comes after the HSBC was hit with hefty fines over money laundering in Switzerland and foreign exchange manipulation in Britain. However, they have also become the main sponsor of Rugby Sevens World Series, with new stops coming in Singapore, Sydney, Paris, and Vancouver ahead of the sport's inclusion in next year's Olympics. Morgan said that it's an exciting time because Rugby Sevens probably is a form of the game which will allow rugby to go global more quickly, and I believe, to me, in other words, they're just saying, let me see where I can get more exposure, either the Rugby Sevens or golf, and that's where they really are trying to explore, Kieran.
Yeah, well, I must say that Rugby Sevens is actually a really entertaining game to watch. You know, we see a lot of it over here, and a lot of competitions, and it's an incredibly fast-paced and hectic game because they play a full-size pitch for, usually regular rugby is 15 players, so they play the game with seven aside, and it's they play the same size of field, and it's an incredible kind of pressure on the guys to cover that much space on their own. But it's certainly a good game to watch, but that's an interesting story you just said there.
Okay, that wraps up our Par 5 News. It's sponsored by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, gloves, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it also offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discount travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is My Golf in the U.S., which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner allow members to sell used or new golf equipment online. Visit United Golf Network today and check out the products, discount, and their opportunity. And with that in mind, that wraps up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take one more short break. When we come back, there's the practice range where we will provide an in-depth wall-to-wall preview of the FedEx Cup Final, as well as a look now and ahead of Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, and Jordan Spieth in their battle for number one. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and we take our swings at it. This week, I'm having Kieran Clark here with me, and we're going to divide this practice range into two segments, but both are related somehow. But one is the FedEx Cup, the other one is the battle for number one, where the top three players, which are playing in the FedEx Cup Finals, will have something to say. And hey, Kieran, the 2015 FedEx Cup will be decided this week in the Tour Championship at East Lake in Georgia. Jason Day heads the standings, but any of the top five will take the cup if they win this event. The five men who will win the FedEx Cup and the $10 million bonus prize with a victory at the Tour Championship are Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Henrik Stenson, and Bubba Watson. The points reset for this final event of the playoffs, so theoretically anybody in the 30-man field could take the big prize, but 30th place Harris English, to do so, he would have to win at East Lake, and the leading players would have to perform terribly. There are countless possible scenarios through and get it, and a great deal to play for, both in terms of prize money for this event and a share of the bonus pool. Last year, Billy Horschel took the title and the FedEx Cup by holding off Rory McIlroy and Jim Furyk. He didn't make the top 30 after the BMW Championship this year, so he won't be able to defend his title at East Lake. East Lake Golf Club is one of the oldest in the USA and was the home club of legendary amateur Bobby Jones. The course has hosted Tour Championship on 12 previous occasions and was the venue for the 1963 Ryder Cup. In 2008, the course was closed for a few months with a view towards recreating the layout's original firm and fast playing characteristics. Yarrow Hole was definitely a success. It's a challenging track now, although low scoring is not uncommon. The winning score has been around the 10-under par mark since the changes were made, including Billy Horschel's 11-under par last year. The key hole here that everybody has to look for is the 18th. It's a 235-yard par 3 with deep bunkers left and right of a two-tiered green. When the wind is against, many will need a fairway wood to get up there. A par is a tough task, particularly if it's for victory on Sunday afternoon. So, Kieran, even more so if it would be for a $10 million paycheck.
Well, that's right. We've all, in the past, in the recent years of the FedEx Cup, seen some incredible instances where players going head to head for the $10 million. I remember Jim Furyk holding that putt in the last with his cap turned backwards the wrong way around, and he held that putt in the rain to get him down from the bunker, which was incredible to win the $10 million that year. Obviously, remember the battle between Bill Haas and Hunter Mahan, who, you know, in reality, really were well out of it before. You know, Bill Haas was 25th in the rankings going into the last event, and somehow came through and actually won the event. Of course, playing that recovery shot from the edge of the water, which was incredible. So it has brought some drama, and you know, while I have real reservations about the idea of, I don't find much compelling in the idea of watching someone, a rich guy, is essentially playing just to get richer. I don't think there's much interesting about that. However, there is something about watching a guy with a putt for $10 million. That, you know, imagine that. That must get to you, even if you got a few million dollars in the bank already. So it's a great sort of showpiece event in many ways. Obviously, you have 29 players in the field, and Jim Furyk, unfortunately, has withdrawn because of an injury, which may later on prohibit him from playing in the President's Cup. I think we'll see how that goes down. But, you know, obviously, the top five players, you know, if any of them win, they'll win the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup. So there's that knowledge there. They know what to do. And Jason Day, obviously, if anyone deserves to win the FedEx Cup, then it's certainly him, but he's got to go out to actually earn it. That's really the thing. It's, you know, even if you've played superbly throughout the season and won more events than anyone else and won more money than anyone else, you've still got to go out in that final event and earn it. So there's that. That's, again, in many ways, like a true playoff system. You know, playing the NFL, you can win every single game in the regular season and win all the playoffs, but if you don't win the Super Bowl, then it all counts for nothing in reality. So in many ways, this is kind of golf's equivalent of that. So it'll be fascinating to see how it goes down. As you say there, East Lake is a course of a great history to it and a great heritage, and very unique, of course, in respect that the last hole is a par 3. That's not something we see very often. Greenbrier is one that stands out in my head from there. So, from that standpoint, so it's we've seen the best players here of the season overall and the playoff season in particular. And for me, looking at this thing here, you look at the danger guys and the Jason Day. Can he maintain this form? You know, all sounds like he probably could, but again, the odds say you can't win them all. So, if he doesn't win suddenly, then opens the door for everybody else to come in and potentially win the thing. Obviously, potentially Jason Day could still win the FedEx Cup if he doesn't win the event. That's still one of the many mathematical permutations that are certainly possible. And that respect becomes a bit messy in that way. And I think for the PGA Tour and for the TV companies, the best thing for them is if one of the top five guys goes and actually wins the thing and wins the whole tournament, because that's easy to explain. But when you get the guys who are ranked in the 20s, when they get in a chance to win, it all gets a bit complicated, and that's perhaps a downside to the FedEx Cup. But again, it's an opportunity for these guys to go out there. A small field, so in theory, the event should be easier to win because you go to, you know, all these events every week, 120 players, 150 players, even last week 70 players. All those guys are capable of winning the event, so you're reducing the number of potential winners to 29, and in theory, that should be easier to win. So it's a wide-open event in that way, and certainly and hugely lucrative. And it'll be certainly interesting to see if Jason Day can carry his form on and claim this prize. And of course, talking about the Player of the Year, and now it's a real debate between, is it going to be John Spieth winning his majors and winning his events, or will it be Jason Day for the form he's shown in the latter half of the season? And it's an interesting discussion. And actually, you know, if Jason Day wins the FedEx Cup, wins the Tour Championship, wins the FedEx Cup, he'll won six times and won the FedEx Cup. And of course, it's the players themselves who vote for the Player of the Year. And that'll be interesting, because we'll see just how much the players themselves, obviously they love their money and all that, but just how much do they value the FedEx Cup as a competition, as a trophy, or will the players decide to vote for Jordan Spieth, who of course won the Masters and the US Open? So an interesting little debate that could arise if Jason Day wins the Tour Championship. But of course, Jordan Spieth, of course, is ranked number 2. He can come right through here and shake off some of that mixed form he's shown in recent weeks and win this one and put that debate to bed. I think danger guys, I look at Henrik Stenson, who has played very consistently, finished second twice, of course, during the FedEx season so far. He, of course, won this 2 years ago, as well as winning the race to Dubai. I think this is his time of year. He plays amazingly well in September and October. He plays well in the fall for some reason. I think he enjoys the summer far too much. So we'll see what happens there. But and outside of the valley, you know, I look at someone like Kevin Kisner as being a potential outside left field winner. So many things can happen. There are 29 guys in the field, and all of them have a chance to win the Tour Championship, obviously, and also to win the FedEx Cup and the $10 million bonus prize. So there's a lot going on there, and you know, whether we think it's compelling watching rich guys getting richer, you know, it's certainly exciting in its own way, so I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes down.
That's something that Donald Trump will be very proud of you saying. The richer gets richer, so... The weather forecast.
Yes, indeed. I don't think. But put it this way, I don't think Donald Trump and me would agree on very much politically. That's for sure.
Yeah, but that would be one. That would be one. The weather forecast was reasonable. Although showers are possible on Friday and Saturday. Winds should be light to moderate. And to mention, you mentioned Jim Furyk. His great sand save there to win. The FedEx Cup, and unfortunately he has withdrawn from this week's Tour Championship due to lingering soreness in his left wrist. It's not a surprise. That's the result of his mid-tournament withdrawal at the Conway Farms this last week, and he fell 7 spots to 16th in the FedEx Cup standings. At this point, there's concern whether he will be able to compete in the President's Cup. Captain Jehas would be able to replace him in advance of the competition, so it's likely that at least one golfer has been put on alert as a sub if he already hasn't been. In a statement, Furyk said that while I'm disappointed to miss this week's event in Atlanta, I am now placing all my efforts on being healthy and ready to play in the President's Cup. Captain Jay Haas will be made aware of my progress in the coming days as we see how to the injury response to the treatment. So very sad to see that Jimmy's having such a great year. And about the players, the skills here, they need to be handling the pressure. With such fast sums of money on the line, the tension tends to be pretty high down the stretch in this event. The man who can really put that pressure to one side will stand on top at the end of this week. And I have to say, definitely, Jason Day, he's on fire at the moment. And if he continues to play the way that he has been, it seems there can be only one winner at Eastlake, and that's him. Ricky Fowler, he can win the FedEx Cup with a victory here, and he'd love to do it to solidify his position as one of the big four, together with Dave McIlroy and Spieth. DJ, hey, he's something of a forgotten man given the fantastic play of Dave, Spieth, and Fowler this year, but he's still lurking in sixth in the standings and could just sneak in under the radar to make that big prize money. But his win, they will be entering this tour championship with, and the first, he's giving any of the top 30 players an opportunity to win. But unfortunately for those other 29 golfers, he's playing his best golf of his career at the moment. That last six starts, he has won four times and has 12 top finishes in the other two tournaments that he hasn't won. Some golfers don't even get four wins in their career. Day has done it in his last six attempts. The magnitude of his performance this season is even starting to draw comparisons to Tiger Woods of 2000. Johnny Miller went as far as to say, "I actually think he's playing superior golf to Tiger in 2000, as far as shooting on low scores." Of the 19 events he has started this year, he's finished top 25 in 14 of them. He's also 47 under par, ridiculous, in his first three playoff events so far. He enters as the heavy favorite to win the FedEx Cup. As for the other golfers, may God have mercy on their souls, because the way he's playing, there's no way he loses. So any final words on this before we go to the battle for number one?
I would love to comment on what Johnny Miller said there. You know, Jason Day has been fantastic, and I'm a huge fan of his, and I love watching him play, and I think what he's done in recent months has been incredible. However, I think until Jason starts winning majors by 15 shots, we can maybe refrain from the comparing him to Tiger Woods in 2000. So I think Johnny Miller has got a bit ahead of himself there, as he often does.
Well, remember he said, then he corrected somewhat, and he said, as far as shooting low scores.
That's a bit of a caveat there, yes.
Yeah, he did some Michael Jackson and did some, backpedaling there with the moonwalking. But anyway, there's a battle for number one and the player of the year as well. Jason Day has plenty of rivals at the moment, but very few peers. 3 months ago, he was number 10 on the official World Golf Rankings. Now he's number one and by far the hottest golfer on the planet. He went virtually unchallenged on Sunday and finished the week T-first in eagles, in birdies. He was first in driving distance, in stroke gains, tee to green, and an astonishing 15.978 in stroke gains total. But, they have been on an incredible run since narrowly missing the British Open, since you mentioned earlier in our weekend backspin. In his last six starts, since he has won four times the Canadian Open, the PGA Championship for his first major, and the first two FedEx Cup events, and played at a sizzling, and here there's 101 under par clip on those six starts. He said, and I'm going to quote, "I think it might change some people's minds about the player of the year if I go ahead and win this week, but we can't deny what Jordan has done in the majors championships this year. For a 22-year-old kid to accomplish what he's done, that he's been an amazing ride." And he added a moment later, "I still think it's him." His fellow players are unsure. When Ricky Fowler was asked to pick between the two, he replied, "I am glad it's not my decision." He clearly forgot that he'll have to cast a ballot at the season's end. Rory McIlroy is in the world's number two. He's clearly on the comeback trail. He was number one, even though he had to miss all his tournaments because of the soccer injury to his ankle. But still, he's got a great year. I mean, he's won three times, one second and five times. He has finished fourth through 10th with three missed cuts. And that his last three tournaments to be that way. The PGA Championship, he went solo 17th. The Deutsche, he was T29. And the BMW, he finally started to show more of the old Rory. So he's gaining ground and he's gaining confidence now back to play great at the Tour Championship. He finished T4th. Jordan Spieth, well, number three, how can we forget? He's got four wins. Two of them majors, four second places, one third, five times, four through tenth, four missed cuts. So in a way, he's had a better numbers than Jason Day for Player of the Year. Jason Day, well, he's played 19 events, five wins, one more than Jordan, and one major. Once he was third, five times, four through tenth, and two missed cuts. If he goes on to win, definitely makes it very, very interesting for the voters to see who was the Player of the Year. What are you going to be saying? I mean, Jason has had a great day, but you can argue it's like a second half of it. And then you can argue that Jordan had a great first half, even though he's like slid a little bit at the end. So I still think somehow that Jordan is going to end up being the Player of the Year, even though if Jason Day wins this year. But what we have looking forward, when Rory McIlroy gets back on track, Jordan Spieth gets back on track as well, because he's just getting back after those two missed cuts. And with Jason Day, the way he's playing, I mean, and not to take away from Ricky Fowler, but right now these are the three that everybody's looking at. I mean, there's going to be a great show to watch as to who's going to be number one, at least for the next few years, Kieran.
Yeah, absolutely. And the top three there, Day, McIlroy and Spieth, you know, they're all so closely matched in the world ranking. The points that they have, there's nothing in it. You know, it can change week to week as it has done in the past month, and it will continue to do so until one of them can sort of gain some kind of dominance over the others. And it's something that back and forth is certainly very interesting, and we haven't seen it for a very long time. And all three of them, of course, you know, they're such explosive players to watch. You know, they're so. You know, they're aggressive players. They're fantastic putters. They're everything. They're just brilliant talents, and they're also young guys. You know, you got Jason's 27, almost 28. Rory's 26, and Jordan's 22. So they're all got a great future ahead of them, and they're all, of course, from different parts of the world. We have an American, we have a Northern Irishman, and we have an Australian. So all corners of the globe are covered here, and so that it's compelling in so many ways. And obviously, as you see, the guys behind them, you know, Ricky Fowler, Hideki Matsuyama, these young guys are, again, are in their 20s, and they're brilliant players as well. So there's so much going on. And certainly, in terms of the quality of player and the depth of player that we have, golf's in a fantastic place in that respect in this post-Tiger Woods era. We now have the era of these young guys, and it's funny because the media, and I always laugh at the media, which I'm kind of part of myself, but I always laugh at our people who always, they're so quick, they have such short memories. You know, we started the year, it was the Rory era. Rory was going to dominate, so this was his time to establish himself as being a great player. Then, of course, it became the Jordan Spieth era when he won the Masters in the US Open. And then, of course, it became the era of the big three, suddenly, when Jason Day won the PGA Championship. And now, it's Jason Day's era, apparently. So, we've had four different eras this year, so who knows what can happen in the coming months? You know, that's the absurdity of it all. You know, we keep hearing these things, but you know, obviously, and I've got a big four with Ricky Fowler, so I think we just let it play out and see what happens and pick up the pieces from there. But certainly, the potential is there for some really compelling matchups and compelling events and some compelling majors. If you look ahead to the Masters in April, you know, could you imagine if we had two or three of those guys going head-to-head in the back nine? It would be unbelievable. And you know, and there's still guys like Dustin Johnson, guys like Bubba, Henrik Stenson, again, all brilliant players who are a bit older, but you know, they're still brilliant competitors and amazing players. So there's so much to savor right now. But this battle for number one, you know, the number one ranking isn't something that people don't pay that much attention to as such. People are interested, obviously, in the majors. That's what defines people's careers. But world number one is obviously a massive accolade to have and to. And you absolutely have to, you know, it's a big achievement to actually earn that, and all these guys who are jockeying for that position, and it'll be fascinating to watch. Like, it'll change all the time with the complications of the system that they have, But I'm looking forward to seeing how these guys play head-to-head with each other, because I think they're all positive characters in many ways as well. They're very likable. They speak well. They're good representatives of the game as well. You know, they're people you'd actually want your game to be the face of. You know, people watch the game of golf and see Jason Day, see Jordan Spieth, see Rory McIlroy, see young guys who are fit, athletic, great players, and also really good ambassadors for the game. And that's something as well that's really nice about this particular period that we have in the game right now, as these young guys, they're all well-spoken and they carry themselves with great distinction, not just in the golf course, but also off it. So it's... I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes down, but I enjoy watching them all for different reasons. I think they all have slightly different games as well. Rory McIlroy, for me, is still the best player in the world. I think when he plays to his best, he wins. I think his putting is the one negative he has on Day and Spieth, but every other part of his game is superior to the two of them. No one has a better golf swing than Rory McIlroy. All his figures from tee to green are outstanding. I think he has the potential, when he has a decent putting week, to still win events by a significant margin. But Jason Day has the confidence behind him right now. He has the belief that he can actually go out there and dominate events. And he's winning in different ways. He's winning tight events. He's winning dominantly as well. And he, as I said earlier on, he has all the tools to become a real dominant player. And he has all the tools that you'd want, attributes that you need to be a top player in the professional game these days. Power, you know, real kind of dynamic play to his game, and also a fantastic putter. And aggressive as well. Well, Jordan Spieth is a bit different in respect. He's more of an all-round player. He's not a power player as such. You know, but he's a solid iron player, and obviously on his day, he's a fantastic putter and has a tremendous short game and a real ability to score, a real good golfing brain. So they have different qualities, different strengths, weaknesses, and that makes that a fascinating competition and you know, partnership and duel for those of us who study the game in that way. It's a interesting dynamic, how different they are, but as well they have the same strengths and the weaknesses as well. So it's I'm looking forward to how it goes down. Obviously the Tour Championship is going to be the first barometer of that. The one disappointment, of course, is that we're now at the end of the season in reality, and the big events are dwindling all the time, and we won't really see these guys going head-to-head too often until next year. So the 2016 promises to be great, and I'm looking forward to it already.
Me too. I can't wait for it. And to finalize, I'm going to say something funny about Jason Day. He said, you know, in 2007, he made a comment about becoming the world number one, and everybody laughed at him. You know, and he even said, you know, it didn't work out so well, but hey, look at him now. He's number one. And they asked him this week, hey, how about, you know, fellow Queenslander Greg Norman, are you looking forward to being number one like him? And he said, hey, wait, it's just my first week number one. I still would have 330 more to go, so I'm not looking that far away. So he learned from that over time. But anyway, he should enjoy it for now. It's going to be a great year next year. Let's take one final break. When we come back, we're going to have our final putts.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now we're going to go to our final putts, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about some of the results around the world, so you know, hey, we cover everybody. Let's say, you know, on the same day of the U.S. women won a dramatic Solheim Cup in Germany, the top club professionals from the United States and UEI, Great Britain and Ireland, squared off in the PGA Cup matches, and competing nine time zones away, you know, west of them, you know, the GBI won 13.5 to 12.5, just another close victory. And it was the first for GBI on American soil, so another exciting one there. But the U.S. came out empty this time on the other side. Going now to Japan, talking about Ryo Ishikawa, after he was eliminated from the FedEx Cup playoffs in the first event, he returned to his native land and won the Japan Golf Tour's ANA Open in Hokkaido on Sunday. You know, PGA Tour regular nicknamed the Bashful Prince turned 24 last Thursday and proceeded to post his 12th victory on his home circuit there. Vicky Hurst won the Symetra Tour's Garden City, Kansas City Charity Classic on Sunday. She's a 25-year-old Floridian, a former Southern Cup player. Coming back from the wrist injury, she closed at 72 at Buffalo Dunes Golf Club to finish at 8 under par, 2 strokes ahead of Olivia Jordan Higgins. She secured a spot among the tour's top 10 earners, thereby regaining full LPGA status for next season. Talking about the McKinsey Tour, Jason Millard, he won the season-ending Freedom 55 Financial Championship in London, Ontario on Sunday, prevailing in a playoff against Ryan Williams with a par on the second extra hole. He's a 26-year-old Tennessean who won this, and now, you know, he earned a Web.com Tour card for next season, along with the Tour's other top five earners this season, J.J. Spahn, Chen Sonpan, Taylor Pendrith, and Sam Ryder. In Japan's LPGA, Han Yol-Kim, she won the Japan LPGA's Munsingwonware Tokai Ladies Classic in Aichi. On Sunday, she's a 26-year-old from Korea who closed with a 68 on the Mihama course in Chiang Mai to finish 54 holes and win 1 stroke ahead of compatriot Jihai Shin, closing with a 68 in Japan's Akiyaka Matsumori. Also on the Sunshine Tour, Dean Burmester won the Sun Windmill Challenge in South Africa. He's a 26-year-old from South Africa who made 5 birdies on that final round and won with a 65 under. He finished 54 holes at 18 under par, 4 strokes ahead of countryman Callum McMowat. And finally, on the PGA Tour Latin America, how can I not talk about that? Mitch Krzelewski, he won there the Volvo Colombian Classic in Bogota on Sunday. He's a 27-year-old Australian, former Augusta State golfer. He closed at 66 at Club Campestre El Rancho to finish 10 under par, 1 stroke ahead of Mexico's Sebastian Vasquez. And with that, I finish my final pot, Kieran. So let's see what you have for your final pot.
Yeah, thank you, Carlos. And I have a... Many people will be aware that Mark Rolfing, the NBC and Golf Channel announcer, regularly on the golf course, he falls around and he interviews players as well. He recently confirmed he was to undergo treatment for salivary gland cancer that's been was diagnosed recently. He's taking a break from announcing and commentating from NBC in the process, hoping to come back next year for the Hyundai Tournament of Champions, which is, of course, in his home state of Hawaii, where he lives. And he's, you know, when you go when the events are actually there on television, he constantly mentions that he's from Hawaii. You know, it's incredible. Every second word involves that. However, we'll see him back for that. But in amongst a lot of support he's received, of course, since the diagnosis and his confirming that he had the cancer, a lot of great responses and goodwill from the golf community. But one note stood out to Mark Rolfing, and that was a handwritten letter from the King, Arnold Palmer, the 7-time major champion and you know, one of the greatest all-time players and most popular individuals in the history of the game. And Rolfing said in a radio show in Ed Sherman, he said, I opened it and there were tears streaming down my face. It made me realize how lucky I am and what the game has done for me. A letter from Arnold Palmer in regular mail. It was typical Arnold. I've had a lot of support. That one stands out, and Arnold Palmer, you know, he's 86 years old now, and he, every day in his Bay Hill office at the golf course, he sits there and he writes tons of letters to winners of tournaments and players, individuals in the game who need some support. He does an awful lot of a little personal touch, writing a handwritten letter and wishing them well, and it's, those little things are a massive boost to people in bad times. And he does it in good times as well, and he congratulates people for winning tournaments, and that's just a sign of the man that he is. And he also is extremely generous away from that with fans who write to him with fan mail or have autograph requests. He's amazing in getting back to them and always responds warmly and treats everyone with respect. And Arnold Palmer, you know, he's obviously in so many ways he's a figure from the past. You know, his great success, his last major was in 64, and you know, that's over half a century ago. But his legacy continues to this day, his legacy not just as a golfer but as a gentleman, as someone who other players coming up, young and old, people should aspire to try and be a bit more like him, because he treats everyone with respect. And there's so much to admire, and this incident with Mark Rolfing, this letter he wrote to him, is just another example of that. And I must say, Arnold Palmer as well. He was One moment back in the summer that stood out to me was when he came over for the Champion Challenge at the Open Championship at St Andrews. He hadn't been signed for a long time, and 86 might be his last trip over to Scotland. And he came over and he hit one shot and he walked around and he savoured the atmosphere with the fans that were there and the sunshine of the old course. And and he spoke a lot about the people of the game, the fans who he recognised from years previously, and people who remembered watching him in the past. And he has a great love of that. He loves people who loved watching him play golf. And it's something that I think all sports people nowadays, and all different sports, I think with the money that's involved now, the media scrutiny, so many players of all sports have perhaps become somewhat detached from the people that make them the money, the fans who pay to watch them. And Arnold Palmer has never forgotten that, and that is why he is revered so much, for the way he respects fans, but also for people that he knows within the game. And Mark Rolfing certainly appreciated what he did for him there. So we wish Mark Rolfing all the very best in his treatment. Hope he comes back on the air 100% fit and healthy in the new year. And we hope that Arnold Palmer is around for a long time to come to continue to bring joy and love to people's lives, because what he did here was a fantastic gesture, and it was typical of the man that he is.
Most certainly, and definitely a big heart, and that's why they call him the King. Well, Golfaholics, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest in the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour and a half. Thank you, Kieran, once again for coming in and being so great.
My pleasure, Carlos. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
And let me tell you, Golfaholics, he has a cold and he's endured this year with us. So you could not even tell. Kieran, that was great. I mean, as usual.
Don't worry, I'll survive. Don't worry about me.
I mean, that was Michael Jordan-like.
Absolutely.
So don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here in Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Kieran Clark, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.